This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Indira Lakshmanan of the Poynter Institute for Media Studies and the Boston Globe, and this is On Point. Another wild swing on the street. After the stock market dropped nearly 1,200 points Monday, Wall Street has hit pause on its panic button. The Dow zigzagged before rebounding yesterday from Monday's record one-day drop. President Trump, who took credit for the Dow's gains, kept mum about its losses. Some economists worry we're headed for another recession. Others say hold tight. Investing is a marathon, not a sprint. This hour on Point, the Dow, the economy, and what it means for you. You can join us on air or online. Are you hitting the panic button or taking a wait-and-see attitude? Or is the stock market not your barometer for rating our economy's health? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Washington is Binyamin Applebaum, the New York Times correspondent covering the Federal Reserve and economic policy in D.C. Binya, great to have you.
Hi, India.
Hi. So first, let's talk about the facts on the ground. The Dow dropped by nearly 1,600 points before closing more than 1,000 points down on Monday. Then it clawed back nearly 570 points yesterday. And today we had the Dow futures suggesting that the industrial average would open down. So what is happening with the market?
Well, this all started on Friday when the government reported that wage growth during the first month of the year was a little bit faster than economists had expected. That made investors nervous. Wage growth sounds great, and it is for consumers, but investors started to get nervous that it was a sign that the growth of the economy is beginning to get fast enough to drive up inflation. And if inflation starts rising, they're nervous that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates more quickly. And if the Fed does that, if you're still bearing with me, that starts to slow down economic growth. That's bad for stocks. And so investors, sort of thinking three steps ahead, said, wait a second here, and started selling on Friday, kept on selling on Monday. By Tuesday, had started to reconsider the extent of the sell-off and markets. We'll see what happens today.
All right. Well, you've given us a lot of information. We'll break that down bit by bit. But first, explain to us, on Monday, the Dow fell 800 points in just 10 minutes. How is that even possible?
So there's a couple of different things going on here. One is that markets move much more quickly today than they did in earlier years. And the reason is that a lot of the trading, the majority of the trading, is being done by computers. That old image, the pictures I think we've all seen of traders standing on the floor frantically signaling to each other, that is not the way the stock market works anymore. It is now a conversation between high-speed trading machines that react to each other and that can very quickly start moving in the same direction. And we've seen in recent years a number of instances in which markets have dropped dramatically, rebounded almost instantaneously. The scale of the volatility has really increased in this new era of computerized trading.
You really underscored that with a tweet where you said, you know, traders responding to the market fall, and it was a picture of a bunch of inanimate servers. So it's sort of the change to automated trading. But okay, is this a repeat of the 2010 flash crash? Remind us what that was.
That was one of these instances in which computers essentially started talking to each other and very quickly drove down stock prices dramatically. Asset prices fell incredibly sharply and then bounced back almost as quickly. And so, you know, if you were a long-term investor and you just held what you owned and stayed out of it, what happened that day didn't matter to you. But if you were a person who was trying to make a trade during the course of that day, you might have seen dramatically different prices mere seconds apart. And that raises concerns about, you know, sort of the functionality of markets, because presumably the value of the underlying asset didn't actually change that dramatically. what you're seeing is these computers creating sort of artificial volatility in the market, and someone is suffering as a consequence and someone is profiting as a consequence. And people look at that and say, you know, there has to be a better way. This can't be the most effective way for markets to work.
Now, you gave us a lot of reasons why starting on Friday, investors, traders were looking at a number of different factors and that contributed to the fall. But how much of this has to do with the naming of a new Federal Reserve chairman? Tell us about the new Fed chair, Jerome Powell.
So you obviously can't get into the minds of every investor and say, here's exactly what investors are thinking. But there is a very long-running pattern in which the appointment of a new Federal Reserve chairman adds a dollop of uncertainty to financial markets. People were comfortable. They had a sense of the last Fed chairwoman, Janet Yellen, had been doing the job for 4 years. Markets knew what she thought. They knew what she wanted to do with interest rates. They felt comfortable with her. It was inevitable that her replacement would create a certain amount of uncertainty. The new guy, Jerome Powell, who took the oath of office on Monday morning, has said repeatedly that he intends to pursue, at least in the short and medium term, essentially the same monetary policy that Janet Yellen pursued. He was on the Fed's board since 2012 and has been part of all of their decisions. So continuity is quite likely, but markets don't know him. He doesn't have a history. And you know, we've seen in the past when Alan Greenspan took over as Fed chairman in 1987, that was right before Black Monday. We like to give colorful names to bad days in the stock market, when stocks fell by more than 20% in a single day. We've seen markets test more recent Fed chairmen like Ben Bernanke and even Yellen herself. So this is a common thing, that markets get a little bit more nervous when someone new is in the Fed chair.
All right. Well, speaking of someone new, for the economics newbies out there listening, explain to us really briefly, in simple terms, why the Federal Reserve chairman raising the interest rate might affect the market. I mean, so far, he's left interest rates unchanged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first off, there's no indication that he's planning to do anything different. But if he did, if he raised interest rates, there's really two things that are happening. The first is that the reason the Federal Reserve increases interest rates is to increase borrowing costs and slow down economic growth. That is the tool that they use when they think that things are moving a little too quickly. And if you just want to think of a very simple metaphor of a car, you want the car driving 60 on the highway. If it's going up to 70 to 80, you tap the brakes. And raising interest rates is tapping the brakes. The second thing that happens when interest rates go up is that stocks become a relatively less attractive investment. Bonds, which pay those interest rates to investors, start looking a little bit better. So people who for the last few years have looked at bonds and said, in some cases, bonds were paying zero. In some cases, you were actually paying for the privilege of owning bonds. All of a sudden, as rates start rising, people say, hey, maybe I'll put a little bit more of my money in bonds. And that also weighs on stock prices, because some of the money that was in the stock market is moving to safer investments.
All right. Well, there's also a political element to this, of course. President Trump has personally taken credit for the success of stock market. Let's listen to the president last month touting the surging economy during his first year in office.
Our country is doing really well. Our economy is perhaps the best it's ever been. You look at the job numbers, you look at the companies pouring back into our country, you look at the stock market at an all-time high, unemployment 17-year low.
All right. And back in November, en route to Asia, he told reporters, the reason our stock market is so successful is because of me. I've always been great with money. And just this morning, he's tweeted out, in the old days, when good news was reported, the stock market would go up. Today, when good news is reported, the stock market goes down. Big mistake. And we have so much good, great news about the economy. All right. So tell us, Binya, what does this mean? You wrote a couple days ago, live by the Dow, die by the Dow. If he wants to own the rise in the Dow, does he also own its fall?
So I think that he does. And here's why. And, he inherited an economy that was doing very well. And he announced that it wasn't doing well enough and that he was going to pass a series of measures, including a really big tax cut and some plans for increased government spending that were intended to add fuel to the fire, to make the economy grow more quickly. And frankly, everyone warned him that that wasn't a great idea. Economists, conservative economists, liberal economists, centrist economists, everyone said to him, listen, unemployment, as you just heard the president say, is at the lowest level in almost two decades. The economy is growing. Things are doing well. this is not the moment to throw fuel on the fire. You're going to cause the economy to overheat. You're going too fast. And the president ignored those warnings and pushed through a huge tax cut in the fall and is still pushing for additional fiscal stimulus, including more defense spending. And part of the reason that, you're hearing markets expressing a little bit of anxiety is that they're worried that that effort to stimulate the economy at a time that growth is already about as fast as it can be is going to – that extra money is going to get pushed into prices instead of into growth. It's going to end up causing more inflation, and the Fed is going to react by raising interest rates. And instead of getting a boom, you're going to get restraint.
Of course, the economy is at this point close to full employment. The tax cuts, in fact, you know, put more money back into the system. People have been talking about how both low employment and the tax cut will lead to higher wages and higher prices. So there's that inflationary element. I noticed that the cover of the New York Daily News yesterday had a photo of President Trump with a banner headline, "Day Traitor." So I wonder, could these market losses or inflation damage his standing with supporters whom he promised a strong economy?
Predicting how people are going to react to President Trump, my track record isn't very good, so I'll pass on that specific question. What I would say is that I think that there is a possibility that if markets are more volatile or even, begin to decline, that the president is going to need to find a different way of selling himself as a successful economic manager. There is still a case to be made that the underlying economy is doing very well. And it may well be that markets rebound from this brief blip. This is now the second day of rising stock prices after 2 days of falling stock prices. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, he has over the last year repeatedly cited the stock market as really the key piece of evidence that he is a successful economic manager. That claim was always overstated, but if the market isn't even rising anymore, it does mean that he needs to find a new way to talk to his supporters.
In a few seconds, what's the global impact, do you think?
Well, it remains to be seen. If markets sort of, you know, keep going after a two-day blip, the global impact is nothing. But we may be entering a new era of uncertainty, and it could be the case that, after one of the longest economic expansions in our history, we're finally seeing the end of the tunnel.
Binyamin Applebaum, Washington correspondent for The New York Times, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
I'm Indira Lakshmanan. Stay with us. This is On Point.
This episode of On Point is supported by 23andMe. This Valentine's Day, give someone special a DNA kit from 23andMe. They can receive over 75 detailed online reports about their genetic ancestry, inherited traits, and even information about their health. Go to 23andMe.com/onpoint to get 20% off each kit, now through February 14th. Offer includes free gift wrap.
You have access to the entire world of NPR with your smart speaker. Ask it to play NPR or your local NPR station to check the news while you get ready for work or fix dinner. There's a new radio in your house, and it's easier than ever to listen to Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and more. Just ask your smart speaker to play NPR or your local NPR station.
This is On Point. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. Live by the Dow, die by the Dow? The stock market's not the economy, but if a president claims its rise, does he also own its fall? And what do wild swings in the stock market matter for the little guy if only half of us have any stock holdings? You can join our conversation. How are you reading the stock market tea leaves? Are you feeling bullish or more like a bear ready to hibernate? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio or listen live at pointradio.org. Here's CNN's Jim Sciutto on Monday at 4 p.m. when the stock market closed, capping the largest one-day point drop in U.S. history.
That is the bell at the New York Stock Exchange there as the market comes to a close, plunging at latest count more than 1,100 points. At worst during the day, it was down some 1,500 points. The Dow's worst week now in more than 2 years.
Joining me now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Robert Shiller, Nobel Prize-winning economist and professor at Yale University. He created the CAPE, or Cyclically Adjusted Price-Earnings Ratio, which measures earnings over the course of an entire business cycle of 10 years. He also predicted the dot-com bust in 2000 and the U.S. housing crash that sparked the global recession in 2007. Robert Shiller, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Indira.
Hi. So I want to start by asking you, the market has been going up and up for months. Why did it go down now?
That is the famous question. That happens again and again. The same people still don't know why it peaked in 1929. It seems that it should be responding to some news. Well, the news that is mentioned and that Benjamin just mentioned is the Labor Department report of strong labor market. But, you know, it didn't look that unusual. Why is the market reacting so much to it? I would say it's more like an avalanche. When you see avalanches suddenly happening on a mountain, people ask, what caused it? Why today? And experts will tell you, well, you know, I can't tell you why it's today, but it was becoming unstable, and sooner or later it was going to happen. That's the kind of thing that happened. And I think of it as primarily a feedback problem, people interacting, their psychology interacting with each other in an unstable way.
So then let me ask you, why do people, and that means, you know, markets, the media, everyone, why do we make such a big deal over these fluctuations if it's maybe just a feedback loop and half of Americans aren't even invested in the stock market?
Right. Well, it wasn't always this way. We didn't pay much attention to the stock market as portending economic distress until 1929. Before that, they would talk more about bank runs, not stock market. But 1929 has reached legendary proportions, and ever since it's been talked about more and more, and it's a narrative that drives lately, as they've thought on other major corrections, is this 1929 again?
Well, you have yourself compared our current market to 1928, the year before the crash that precipitated the Great Depression. Why?
Well, it seems similar to me, not just popular opinion. Calvin Coolidge was a pro-business president who had nothing but good words and encouraging words to say about business. There were people starting to think the market was going crazy. The New York Times, in its January 1, 1929, New Year's editorial, said the market is going crazy. There's too many people borrowing to buy stocks. So this became a background bit of information that was in everyone's mind in 1929. But the market kept going up until October, and then suddenly it came down. I think people are waiting. They don't want to sell until the last moment, and they think that they can ride the boom, even though they have come to a belief that it's likely unstable.
All right. So yes or no, Professor Shiller, do you see another crash on the horizon coming soon?
I can't say coming soon. I think the market is very high and will likely correct downward sometime over the next 10 years. I can't say exactly when. We're at greater risk. The volatility has gone up. It's really an attention phenomenon. You know, I kind of disagree a little bit with Benjamin's interpretation. It's not as if we're all just reacting to Jerome Powell or something that happened in the labor market report. It's not like that, because most people have actually, they couldn't tell you who Jerome Powell is. It's more a general sense that we're in a dangerous market situation, and I think we still have that sense. So it could keep going up, and then there could be a bigger crash. It would be entirely plausible. But I can't forecast that with any accuracy, because it depends on how the narratives evolve. And that is a puzzle.
All right. Well, fair enough. You're not going to be a Dr. Doom here and stake your career on that. All right. Let's bring in another perspective. Joining us now from Los Angeles is Sungwon Son, professor of economics at California State University, Channel Islands. He's also chair of the investment committee for the Los Angeles City Employee Retirement System, which manages over $18 billion in pension funds. And he's former chief economist for Wells Fargo. Sungwon Son, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. So I want to ask you a bit about this whole question of the stock market is not the economy. We hear people say that whenever the stock market goes down. What does it mean?
Well, there's a lead-lag relationship. Historically, when the stock market has done well, that was a reflection of a healthy economy. For example, during the post-war period, when the economy was growing, there was a 87% probability that the stock market went up. So you can see there's a very good correlation between the two for obvious reasons. And then also, economy is what generates corporate profits. What underlies the stock market is really corporate profits. So you can see there is a very good relationship between the two.
Well, there's, of course, the political question of taking credit and blame. And I want to listen to how back in July, Fox Business host Stuart Varney told Fox and Friends that President Trump's crowning economic achievement was the rising value of the stock market.
Investors think that if we get some form of tax cut, this economy will expand at a 3% rate or better, and this market will go to 21,000 or higher. That's where it is now. It's based on the hope of what the Trump presidency could do for our economy and our country, and it's dependent upon the Republican Party to come through for our president.
All right. But then just yesterday, Stuart Varney was quick to distance President Trump from Wall Street's record losses. Let's listen.
A, the sky is not falling. B, there is no economic catastrophe on the horizon. C, the left is spinning this because they really want to associate President Trump with anything negative.
All right. So I want to ask you then, Sungwon, what do you see as the connection here? Is there a political connection or is this just market forces working on their own?
Well, I think it's primarily market forces working on its own. We all know the economy is at pretty much full employment. Wages are going up more rapidly. Inflation expectations have been pushed up. And then it is not surprising that the central bank has and then will continue to raise the interest rate slowly and gradually. And when you look at the stock, it is a long-term asset. As a result, when the interest rate goes up, that means the present value, the value of the stock goes down because you discount it at high interest rates. So that's one. It is also true that President Trump's tax cut did add fuel to the fire, as Benjamin has pointed out. So that was obviously a factor making the market go higher. I think the problem is the market has been overvalued for quite some time right now. I do follow Professor Shiller's CAPE index, and I would have to say that that tends to exaggerate the valuation at the moment. But other indicators that we look at does imply that the market is overvalued. The other problem is that, many investors and, in fact, the money managers and traders on Wall Street, they have never seen a bear market, and then so they are shell-shocked. They assume that the economy would be going up and up. The stock market would be doing well forever. Well, that's not the case. And so when you combine all these things in the context of overvalued stock market, we've probably seen kind of a setback in the stock market. But the economy itself is fundamentally healthy right now. And we don't really see any structural imbalances like we saw before, such as too much debt on the part of the consumers. And then, a few years ago, we saw, banks undercapitalized. Today, if anything, the banks are overcapitalized. So
okay.
I think the market reaction that we have seen is probably a bit too much.
All right. Well, let's bring it back to the normal level for ordinary people, and let's bring in some of our callers. Tom is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tom, go ahead. You're on the line.
Hi, Indira.
Hi.
I have a question that I have not heard addressed usually ever. When we have drops in the market like this, people are taking money out, and sometimes there's a discussion that it's being transferred to bonds or something else. But for people that have recently invested, they've lost money. And I perceive it as somewhat similar to the financial crisis when people went underwater in their houses. And so somebody, there's a transfer of wealth, I believe. Some people that are more experienced in the market are taking money off and reinvesting it someplace else or just holding it. But new investors are stuck.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. Professor Shiller, what do you say to Tom's point about this transfer of wealth?
Well, I think it's a good point. It reminds me of a theory presented by Professor Irving Fisher during the Great Depression, who emphasized the transfer of wealth, that people who were risk takers lost money in the stock market crash, and so they're less important economically. So the more conservative people gain ascendancy, and the whole economy pushes back to a less entrepreneurial, more conservative tack. That's an important theory. Thank him for bringing that up.
All right. Thank you, Tom. All right. Let's take another call from Jerry, who's calling us from West Palm Beach, Florida. Jerry, go ahead.
Hi, Indira.
Hi.
Just a comment, and it's to answer a question that you posed earlier. Why not feel bullish? In my city, West Palm, you know, we've seen privately funded high-speed rail open up. A new baseball stadium's just been built. We have high-rise towers breaking ground. Huge jumps in home values, and better jobs are being advertised in the area. I know I'm getting a bigger check this month, and I'm putting it right into the market. And the reason for that is because even with a dip, even a 20% crash like our Black Monday in the 80s, we're still way up from a couple years ago. And I really believe that this is our new reality.
All right, really Jerry, fine. Thank you so much. All right, so Professor Sohn, Jerry's feeling bullish. He's saying, why shouldn't I feel good about it? Is he right? Is this the right time to buy stocks?
Well, I think it's time to be cautious. In fact, we are due for a correction. I think if we were to have some sort of an orderly correction, that would be very good for the economy and good for the stock market. As I mentioned, the stock market is overvalued, and the stock market has probably ran ahead of the fundamentals, in this case, the economy, which is very good. So that's why some sort of a correction, I think, would be good.
So let's define some terms for our listeners. I think a market correction is technically defined as a 10% drop. Do you see that on the near-term horizon, and would it be a good thing?
Well, I think it would be a good thing because in the long run, that would make the stock market healthier and then bring the market more in line with the economic fundamentals, which is good. Whether that's going to happen in the near term or not, I do not know. I'm not that smart. But hopefully we will have a orderly correction, you know, fairly soon. And again, as I said, that would be good for the stock market in the long run.
Well, Professor Sohn, you actually chair a committee that manages over $18 billion in pension funds for the city of L.A. So what does this fluctuating stock market mean for people like them who hope to retire soon?
Well, we are a long-term investor, so we do not react to short-term ups and downs. And using this long-term strategy, we have done pretty well. I don't really advise individuals to buy and sell. Some people view the stock market as a casino. That is not the best approach. So you have to take a long-term view and then be patient and then stay put.
All right. Professor Shiller, you are the economist who predicted the U.S. housing crash, which sparked the recession in 2007. So how do you see what's happening now is affecting the housing market this year and in the years to come?
Okay, well, the housing market went through the biggest correction downward ever around 10 years ago with the financial crisis. And it didn't rebound upward until 2012 nationally. And now it's been going up at a good clip now for like 6 years. Looking at this, I don't think that it will continue indefinitely. Like the stock market, it's a speculative market. And Jerry said he's feeling bullish. He's encouraged by huge jumps in home values. I would counsel him to be a little bit more cautious, because these things do come to an end. Now, he's right. It isn't the end of the world. And if you wait longer, it might continue going up.
All right, Jerry in West Palm Beach, Florida, I hope you're still listening to your free advice from a Nobel Prize-winning economist there. So it might keep going up, but you think that the housing market, the stock market, you think also you agree with Professor Sohn that there is a correction coming?
Well, of course there will be someday. Okay, I wish I knew when. That's the problem. Another thing that keeps bothering me about the current discussion is we've only talked about America. There's a whole world out there. America is the most highly priced market in the world.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and punterful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. We're talking about our economy in 2018 and where it's heading. And you can join the conversation. Be honest. Have you put in a call to your broker? And if so, are you buying or selling? What are you asking your financial planner? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio or online at onpointradio.org. Some of you are already having your say. Kevin Simmons says, I'm still happy with the market. I made 20% in 2017 from my 401k. Even with the recent sell-offs, I still made a half of percent so far in 2018. Trump is the man. We also have N. Steph, who says, do you think Donald Trump is ready for a real financial crisis? Do I think the guy who cut taxes during a global economic expansion and full employment is capable of understanding and dealing with a major financial crisis? And Dev says, market volatility makes money. Smart money uses it for its advantage. A market correction was overdue, and it has happened with no change to market fundamentals, and that is a very good thing. All right, my guests today are Robert Shiller, Nobel Prize-winning economics professor at Yale University, and Sungwon Sohn, professor of economics at California State University, Channel Islands. And joining us now is Michelle Singletary from Bowie, Maryland. She's a nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're so glad you joined us. And you just wrote a piece today for the Washington Post headlines, I Feel You on the Stock Market Swings, and listeners can link to it on our website, onpointradio.org. So, Michelle, sum up what you said in your article for people who are invested in the stock market. Is it time to panic or is it time to buy at a lower price?
Yeah. This is one of those times where you have to listen to your head and not your heart. I'm a regular kind of folks. My people didn't have money in the market, so I'm the first generation. And on Monday, I said, okay, don't look. Then I looked, and I was like, but it wasn't as bad as I thought. And really, the thing is, people are saying, don't panic. Well, that's how you feel. I mean, if you're a regular person working, trying to save for your retirement, of course you're going to be worried about what happened. The thing is not to act on that. And so I just wanted to write and assure people that what you're feeling is not out of the ordinary. It's not like you don't know what's going on or you're not smart about investing. It is scary because this is your money, the money that you need for many of us for retirement. And I just wanted to tell people that I'm feeling the same thing you're feeling. I feel you, but I'm going to just put things in perspective. And so I talked to a lot of financial experts about why this isn't, the end of the world.
So don't panic. Hit the pause button and keep going, right?
That's right. Yeah, stay the course. Feel what you feel, but know that your feelings aren't facts. The economy is strong, and they've been talking for forever that the market was a little overvalued, and so it's pulling back a little bit. And I looked this morning. I know I shouldn't. And it's back up, not to where it was a week ago, but it's still back up, and it's still doing fine.
All right. Well, to that point of the fundamentals of the economy, on Monday, the day he was sworn in, the new Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said that the Fed would support continued growth and price stability. Let's listen.
Unemployment is low. The economy is growing. And inflation is low. Through our decisions on monetary policy, we will support continued economic growth, a healthy job market, and price stability. I am also pleased to report that our financial system is now far stronger and more resilient than it was before the financial crisis that began about a decade ago. We intend to keep it that way.
All right, Michelle. So now that we are close to full employment, we have this new Fed chairman who might raise interest rates to rein in inflation. What kind of advice are you giving people overall for their personal finance decisions?
You know, here's the key. No one knows what the market's going to do. We know what it's done in the past. We don't know what it's going to do in the future. So you need to come up with a plan for you and an investment plan that is comfortable, that's going to allow you to sleep at night. So, you know, you hear this word about diversification, but all that means is that you just don't put all your eggs in one basket. Here's the thing. We need to be more worried about inflation. And so your money has to grow. And right now, putting it in a CD or a savings account is not going to allow you to keep pace with inflation. So you've got to be in the market. Just, you know, seek advice. Do the best that you can to be as diversified as you possibly can. Don't watch the daily ups and downs because that's going to drive you nuts. But you do need to invest so that your money can grow so that it can keep pace with inflation.
All right. Well, let's listen to one of our callers. Diane is calling in from Brattleboro, Vermont. Diane, go ahead.
Hi, Indira.
Hi.
Excuse me. My question is about bonds. I'm 64. I'm going to be a retiring teacher in June. I've always read, and when I've spoken to other people who know more about this than I do, that you should be really converting stocks to bonds. I've been thinking about that, thinking of calling the people who run my IRAs. I'd like to ask the guests, do they think there's any reason I shouldn't do this at this time, or is this still the wise move to get out of most of my stocks? And if they think I should keep some stocks, I mean, again, this is going to be a big, substantial part of my retirement income. Is this a good time? And what would they recommend as a ratio of keeping stocks to bonds?
Wow, great question and, you know, serious. All right, well, Professor Soane, since you chair the investment committee for the L.A. Pension Fund, the L.A. Employment Pension Fund, you know, let's hear your answer first.
Yes, I think you are on the right track. What you want to look at is the mix between stocks, bonds, and let's say some cash, such as treasury bills. You know, a common rule of thumb is that you subtract your age from 100, and then that should be the amount of stocks you hold. For example, if you are 60 years of age, this is a simple rule of thumb would say that there should be about 40% in stocks. It is true, as you get older and approaches retirement and post-retirement, you should probably de-emphasize stocks and then emphasize the bonds and probably cash as well. But let us not forget the fact that stocks, they give you a good long-term inflation hedge. Most likely, we are going to be having more inflation down the road, and you want to protect yourself against the inflation. That means you do need stocks, so I would not get out of stocks entirely, but simply shift emphasis from stocks to bonds and cash.
Michelle, do you have anything quick you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, this is, without knowing her full picture, we don't know what else she has, if she has a pension, Social Security. The thing is, you don't want to react on just today's market news. You need to look at your entire picture. I wasn't clear how old she was. Did she say?
64.
64. So she's closer to retirement. So, you know, the experts say you don't want to be too risky. However, if you look at how long we are living, she's probably got, if she's healthy and got longevity in her family, another 20, maybe even 30 years. So in that time period, your money has to grow. So I wouldn't take all of my money and put in bonds because it's not going to, you know, give you the kind of growth that you need. She probably needs to sit down with a planner, someone who can look at everything that she has to see what is appropriate for her. All these rule of thumbs are great in the abstract, but you need to figure out individually what is good for you and what you can stomach. And just don't panic and do something right now. Take your time to look at what you need to do for yourself.
What you can stomach is a really big part of it also, because investing so much is, you know, not just what is the literal up or downside of something, but psychologically, what can you handle? All right, let's take another call from Dave, who's calling us from Shirley, Massachusetts. Dave, welcome.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
My theory on the stock market crash, and please shoot holes in it if you don't think it's right. But with the way computers work against, and the stock market is like run by computers, Well, as a sophisticated investor, you want to buy insurance products or tools such as like shorts or stops. And so if the stock market for your particular stocks drop a certain number, it'll automatically sell it off or put a hold on it. And so in theory, we are always close, or there's always a potential, no matter good or bad market, that if a certain amount of numbers were dropped, then a certain more would be affected and stop and sell or short, you know, you follow. And those numbers can compound quite dramatically, that it wouldn't take much time at all for there to be a windfall of the stock market dropping.
Okay, Dave, thank you so much for bringing that up. It relates a little bit what he was saying about automated trading to a listener, Mark in Ohio, who commented on our website, please discuss how automated trading systems and electronic trades triggered based on rules are impacting market volatility. I see these, Mark says, as increasing market volatility. So Professor Schiller, can you take this question from Dave that we just had and Mark's point also about automated trading?
Yeah. First, I didn't get a chance to comment on the last person. I think that people might take this occasion to rethink their portfolio, because there is a substantial probability of a bear market, but not that I can forecast it. But anyway, you wanted me to answer
so
Dave's
question.
So
you're advising the caller or the retiring teacher to be a bit careful as
well.
Yeah,
this idea that you shouldn't react to something like this doesn't seem to me quite right. Because most people are inertial, and they don't get around to looking at, you know, the percent of your portfolio accounted for by stocks has been going up and up, and maybe you've been complacent. And now that you see other people, you know, a lot of people are reevaluating right now, and you don't have to sell everything, but you have to consider how would you fare if the bad outcome does come, and there is a real chance of that.
Absolutely.
Now, can I answer Dave's
please.
Question? The idea that we heard this from Benjamin, too, that computers did this. I don't think that's right. It reminds me, this isn't new, by the way. We had very low volatility, and we still, you know, just last month and before, and we still had these computers doing their automatic trading. I go back to 1987. People blamed the 1987 stock market crash on program trading. It was computer trading then. That's 30 years ago. And so the overall volatility of the market hasn't shown any major new trend upwards. So I don't think computers are the problem. I think it's people that are kind of inertia for a while, and then their sudden focusing of attention and then recalculating. That is the prime culprit, not... Mm-hmm. And it isn't necessarily wrong to take this occasion to reevaluate your portfolio. Maybe get a financial advisor and think it through. I know other people are doing that right now, too. Well, time is sped up right now. Maybe you have a job to do.
All right. Let's bring in another caller. Devin is calling us from Somerville, Massachusetts. Devin, go ahead.
Hello. I just wanted to point out that, you know, we're talking a lot about numbers in terms of, you know, what's going to bring the biggest return. But when, you know, I put my money into different markets, I also think of, you know, what is this company doing for society? Is it something I agree with? So I also consider the ethical implications, and I just wanted to open that up for discussion, because I think that's really important, too.
All right, Devin, thank you so much for bringing that up, that it's not just about the best return economically, it's also about your values. Michelle, what do you advise people on that front?
I actually do agree, and if I can just circle back, I totally agree with Professor Schiller that what you need to do is have an overall picture of what you're doing, and I work with individuals, so I actually get to see their retirement accounts, their budgets, and he's absolutely right. People, you know, put money into their retirement plan, and whatever they had at that time, they've never revisited it. And what I often find is people are way too conservative the younger they are, because they're so afraid of losing money. And then people get, you know, they want to put –
be more aggressive, and then they're too aggressive as they're getting closer to retirement and in retirement. So this is a time to look at your entire picture, including where you want your money. He's talking about social investing. You know, that's absolutely right. This is your money. Do you want to support certain companies, certain industries? But when I say look at the retirement picture, I don't mean just your retirement profile. I look at your debt. Look at whether or not you're going to go into retirement with a mortgage, because the more you reevaluate your entire financial life, getting rid of debt, making sure that you don't have a mortgage in retirement, that you have some savings so that during these times you can pull from that money rather than maybe sell in a panic. You know, this is what I mean by looking at everything.
That is such good advice, that we need to take a bigger picture and not be, as Professor Schiller said, inert. I think we all tend to suffer from inertia, but we need to be all reevaluating our overall holdings. All right, Professor Schiller, I want to come back to you with a question about how all of this that's happening in the U.S. economy and this stock market fluctuation, how is it going to affect the global economy? And what about the global economy in the long term, not just this year?
Well, it's important to recognize that already we've affected the global economy. Other countries have shown drops as well. So we live in a unified world, and we live in a culturally unified world. And so you can still diversify internationally by putting money abroad, but it's not perfect. And so, yeah, the last recession that we had in 2007 was a global recession, and it's tending to happen with more and more frequency.
All right. Professor Sohn, what are your thoughts on buying international stocks?
Well, I think you should have some of your portfolio in international stock, and that is a part of a good diversification. We are in a global economy, meaning that we are all hooked together like a spider web. So when something happens overseas, it affects you and me here, and then vice versa. One also thing that I should mention is that a lot of times when you look at global stock market, much of that is related to the dollar valuation. For example, recently the value of the dollar has appreciated. As a result, global stocks has done very well. If the dollar appreciates, the opposite would happen. So it is a lot more difficult, a volatile market, because not only do you have to worry about the local markets in China or elsewhere, but also the dollar fluctuations as well.
All right. That's Professor Sungwon Sohn, professor of economics at California State University, Channel Islands. We also heard from Nobel Prize winning economist at Yale, Robert Schiller, and Michelle Singletary, personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. Thanks so much to all three of you for your time today. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. Coming up tomorrow, we'll look at SpaceX and the private space industry. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is On Point.